You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 16th. I'm John Gibson. With me on a Sunday night is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I am psyched. I mean, it was... I mean, I usually, by this time Sunday night, I'm going like, baseball's over for the week. I get a break, you know. I'm like going, okay. But this week was just so gosh darn fun. I wanted there to be a podcast every day.
Yeah, I've thought about that for about 12 years. If we could do one every day, it'd be awesome.
John and I are on slightly different
planes.
Yeah, planes. Planes is a good one. Yep. Not the Jimmy Carter planes.
Yeah, no, not those. I'm in a jet, and Jim is in one of those Cessnas.
I meant he's from Plains, Georgia. Okay, all right. Sorry.
I was kidding. I knew exactly what you meant.
I thought you might, but you're pulling my leg.
It was for the people.
Right. I know. You're all about the people.
And on this week's show, we've got a person whom people will probably remember because he was a Fighters pitcher, Carlos Mirabal. We're going to discuss the latest no-hitter. We've got our Rockin' with Roki segment and a little bit more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
So I caught up with former Fighters pitcher Carlos Mirabal, whose last year in MPB was my first year at the Daily Omiuri, which is now the Japan News. So I talked to him about that before we actually got into the chat. And he pitched 5 seasons in MPB and is now helping run the Retired Foreign Players Association. And he's doing that along with William Brooks. You might know William Brooks, or some people might be familiar with him. Now, Carlos lives in New York, and he just actually released a book in December. It's called Keep It Simple Pitching, A Simple Lesson for Beginners. Right. And it's for basically children who are just starting the game and can read, obviously. And so that's awesome. And I don't know if you're familiar with NFTs, Jim.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with what they are, but that's about it.
Right. He just had one drop on this Japan site called Hexa. So if you guys want to check that out, that's cool. And he coaches baseball, and he's actually got some lessons for our JBW listeners as well. So let's take a listen. Joining us this week on the show is Carlos Mirabal, a former Nippon Ham Fighters pitcher. Thank you so much for sitting down and taking the time with us this week.
You're welcome.
Pleasure to have you on. So you played for a number of managers in 5 seasons in MPB. What stands out about some of the men for whom you played?
I think there was only two managers, I believe. It was Oshima and then Hillman. I think that was it. I think I had, you know, and then Hillman, which, you know, was good. Oshima was a good manager, and that was when we were in Tokyo. And then Trey came over, and then we went from Tokyo to Sapporo. So it was definitely good. But I like both of them. I think both of them were good managers.
Now, how was that move for you as a player, you know, coming and you're joining a team and you're playing in Tokyo, and then you suddenly pack up and move to a place that you don't know much about that's really cold?
it was definitely interesting. But we had actually, when we were in Tokyo, we had actually played in the Sapporo Dome a few times. You know, we went up there and played a couple of games against some of the other teams the previous years. But you know, that one year is, you know, there's kind of rumors, like we don't really know what's going to happen, who's going to go. And then when it's finally announced that we're going to go, it's like, oh boy, you know, you get used to Tokyo. And then it's like, where are we going? Like, what's over there now? Like, how is it going to be? And actually, you know, having a new team, you know, we don't know what to expect. You know, all of our fans that we had were in Tokyo. So everybody is pretty much a Yomiuri Giants fan everywhere. So when we go to Sapporo, we don't really know what to expect. So, you know, Trey was very good with that. And we actually did a lot to try to really get all the fans behind us. Yeah, I mean, we did a lot. Like where we were in uniform, like if you weren't starting pitching that day, we're in our uniforms greeting everybody when they came into the Sapporo Dome. you know, just out there trying to get our faces and our name and our uniform and just everybody. And then that year was actually pretty good. You know, it was 2004 and you know, I had a really good second half that got us to the last game in the Sapporo Dome of the season that we won. And then we had to play one makeup game. But that win put us tied with Bobby Valentine's Marines at the time. And then we played that makeup game and we won and made it to the playoffs. And then we played that was like the first time they did a wild card. And we had played the Cebu Lions in the Cebu Dome. And we lost the third game. You know, it was 2 out of 3. We lost first game. I pitched the second game. We won. And then the third game, we were losing. And then we tied it up in like the ninth inning. And then I think it was Kimoto. I think he was the one that hit the home run that tied it up, our second baseman. And I'd have to check the video. but I believe he was the one that hit the home run. He was our to tie it. And then in the bottom of the ninth, their first batter hit a home run and we lost.
Right. Yeah. And I think the Lions went on to win the Japan Series that year. So that was a pretty good team.
Oh, did they? Yeah. You know, once we lost, I didn't even follow, you know, who won or didn't win. You know, gotcha, what I mean? I was just upset. Like, damn, we lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
I was like, oh, you know, I was like,
I know. The world ends. Tell me about it. I know. I'm a much better winner than I am a loser. So yeah. I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, I know you keep up with NPB since you left. How do you think the game has changed, whatever aspects of the game have changed during the time since you played here?
I don't know if it's changed as much. I think some of the personalities have changed, you know, with the players. some of the culture part has changed in that way when it comes to the players. Looks like some of the fields have changed too, you know, like some of the all turf fields, they still might be turf, but you know, they look like the cutouts of like having dirt, you know what I mean? Where before it might've just been plain green and stuff like that. You know, I still follow the fighters with Shinjo and, you know, I still, you know, I've been back there a couple of times. So I keep in touch with some of my former teammates, you know, who are still do media stuff. And, you know, I still talk to some of the people in the front office with the fighters often. You know, so I'm connecting, and then plus with the Players Association, you know, we have so many players that have gone back, you know, and have reconnected with teams, and you know, we've been so much back into the video games and baseball cards and stuff like that. So I've been able to follow, but I think that's the stuff that I see more than when I was there. There's more connections of players to fans, maybe because of the social media aspect too, with the Twitters and Facebooks and stuff like that. But sure, as far as the gameplay, I mean, it still seems pretty similar, you know, nothing really, you know, I've always liked the Japanese baseball, you know, I've always appreciated bunting and sit dealing and hitting runs and, you know, actual baseball, you know, not like here in the United States where everything is either a home run or a walk or a strikeout, right. You know what I mean?
Strikeout, yeah.
Like you're going to see bunts, you're going to see guys get bunted over, guys stealing, guys, you know what I mean? That's what I like about it.
Okay, now you mentioned Tsuyoshi Shinjo, big boss, and you were a teammate with him for that last season, I guess, for part of that last season?
In 2004, he came back. So the season we went to the Sapporo, the first year we went to Sapporo, he had come back from the United States and he came to our team.
Right. So what kind of teammate was he?
Oh, he was a great teammate. You know, I tell people all the time, like, you know, I just talk to him in the locker room. You know, be there brushing teeth, you know, like, you know, shaving, brushing teeth in the where the sinks and everything were. And he just talked normal, you know, every time, you know, I was married at that time and my daughter was, you know, she was only 4. So every time they would be in a family room or something like that, and he saw her, he'd go up to her and, hey, you know, start playing with her and all that kind of stuff. So I used to tell people, you know, he's a really good dude. And, you know, sometimes you see the stuff in the media and the showman stuff, but you know, inside he's just a regular good dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a good person. Now,
how much at that time did you have a sense that he would be a future manager?
Oh, I had no idea. You know what I mean? Cause I know last year he was actually trying out to come back as a player with the fighters. So I didn't expect him to just be the manager, you know, cause I, you know, usually in, you know, Japan, if guys are going to be managers, they usually start at the minor league level and they kind of work their way up. You know what I mean? The minor league level of the years, and then they become the major league guy, you know, something like that, unless a foreigner like a Trey Hillman or somebody's coming over. And so now he's manager, and I was kind of shocked at first. I was like, oh my gosh, okay. But, you know, he knows baseball. So I'm curious to see how he does. And, you know, being a manager is connecting more with the players and things like that. So, you know, it's kind of trying to get the best out of the players. I know the Fighters got a really young team. So, you know, it's a little, he's probably got a little bit more ahead of him, you know, because, you know, they are such a young team. So, you know, but hopefully they can do well.
Yeah. What I mentioned before was that he's going to have to grow as a manager, as well as helping these players grow, you know, develop on their own as well.
Absolutely.
So it's twofold, and both sides are growing. And I think there needs to be patience on both sides, obviously, because they're both new to the situation. So, but I mean, he's definitely adding some fun, and I don't mind that. I the antics sometimes seem to me too showy.
Yeah.
And that he's taking away from the focus should be sometimes on the players, and it's not, but you know, that showmanship, he certainly, you know, he should be the manager of a Las Vegas baseball team, because he's got the showmanship part down for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely does. And, you know, part of it, too, is the Fighters haven't really won a lot lately. So maybe it's like a good mix up. We'll see how it works. You know, maybe it's a good kind of a mix up to get a lot of attention, you know, get people to come out. You know, at the same time, they got to start winning. But again, it's tough because they are a young team. So you can't expect the young team to just turn around and, you know, magically start winning. It just got to be a little patient. You got to be a little patient
exactly.
with it.
Exactly. All right. Now, I know Major League Baseball is changing a lot. We have all these extreme shifts going on. And I always say this on our show, in the United States, they don't bunt enough. And in Japan, they bunt too much. But it's just a different style. But it seems like a lot is changing Major League Baseball, while Japan seems to not have that problem at all. Why do you think that is?
You know, I just think it's like the philosophy behind baseball, the culture behind baseball, the coaching, the analytics, you know, things like that. I think they're just getting away from the game. Everything is too analytical. Perfect example, Hank Aaron. If you look at Hank Aaron, what, 755 home runs. If you take all his home runs away, he still has over 3,000 hits, right? So he wasn't a home run or nothing guy. He was a hitter. Now, if you ever listen to, I think it's Harold Reynolds had an interview with Hank Aaron or talked about an interview he did with Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron talked about how many bunts he had. And Harold Reynolds was like, what are you talking about, bunts? You know, you're known for home runs. And he said,
don't talk about bunts.
Well, he said when they came up and I came up and they put a shift on, he goes, I bunted and got a hit. I came up, they put a shift on again. I bunted and got a hit. Then they stopped shifting and I swung away. He goes, you got to take the game for what it is. He goes, if they're going to give you something, you take it. And if you ever look at Hank Aaron, he's up there in the leaders of like runs scored and all of that kind of stuff. He's a team player. He bunted, got on first base, let his teammates bring him around, you know, and then eventually they're going to stop shifting. And when they stop shifting, he gets hits. That's why if you look at him, he has 755 home runs, but he has over 3,000 hits if you take all his home runs away. That's a baseball player. Today, everybody's trying to hit home runs. Why are they shifting? All this analytical stuff. What do you do as a baseball player? Hit the ball the other way. Stop trying to hit the home run. Hit the ball the other way. Eventually, they're going to stop shifting. When they stop shifting, then you go for the home run. You know, Ken Griffey Jr., you ever hear his interviews? Hey, you had over 600 home runs. I'm not a home run hitter. But you got over 600. I'm not a home run hitter. I'm a gap-to-gap line drive up the middle hitter. If I happen to catch the ball out in front, it's a home run. If I catch it here, it's a home run. But I'm going for the line drives, and I'll catch it, and it eventually goes. You know, but that's his approach. Now, if you listen to those guys talk, Hank Aaron, Ken Griffey, yeah, they're very exciting ball players. They're great hitters. They hit the ball all parts of the field, but they took what the defenses gave them. You see what I'm saying? So today, you don't see that. You don't see ball players today. You see a guy that's up there to try to hit a million home runs. He's not going to hit a million home runs, but he's still trying. So if the defense is going to shift, hit the ball where they're not. It's not hard. You know, I mean, well, it's hard to hit. I'm not saying it's easy to hit, but the philosophy, the approach is not hard. If they're all shifted over, try to hit the ball left field. You know, why not hit it to left field? you can hit, you can have 500, 600 at bats. You can hit 50 home runs. That still means 550 times you come up. If you had 600 at bats, you're not getting a home run. You see what I mean? You're not getting a home run. So, and who hits 50 home runs nowadays? Not many. So, you know, think about it. 500, 600 at bats. If you get 40 home runs and 600 at bats, that's 560 times that you did not hit a home run. And those 560 times, if you keep trying to go for the home run, look at the odds. You're not going to get one. So go for the singles, go for the doubles, go for the hits. They'll stop shifting and you'll probably hit more home runs than you're actually trying to do. But these are the approaches that people don't think. They think analytics is the reason. And the problem with analytics is analytics are not designed to win baseball games. Analytics are designed for individuals to try to achieve certain things. A guy hits a home run. That's better than, you know, this. Yeah, great. But you know what? If there's a man on second base, less than two outs, and a guy hits the ball to the right side and gets him over to third, and the next guy drives him in, you score the run. You got a chance to win. So team doesn't equate with analytics. They try to spin it to make it do it, but it doesn't. How many times have you heard over the years, oh, we got the best team on paper? You still got to play the game. On paper is analytics. You still got to play the game. Best team on paper doesn't always win the championship. You know what I'm saying? And look at Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter did an interview one time, and they were sitting up there, and they were like, oh, man, you guys lost in the World Series. And he was like, oh, you know, Jeter doesn't like to lose. And the interviewer was saying, well, yeah, but you guys, you lost in the World Series. You guys had a great season. He goes, we lost. And people in the audience started laughing. And he was like, yeah, but you guys did really good. He goes, we lost. He goes, the idea is to win. When you don't win, it's not a great season. The idea is to win the championship. If you don't win the championship, I didn't have a good season. We lost. So Jeter was like, I don't understand the concept. He doesn't get it in his mind that, oh, yeah, you great, second place. No, he goes, the idea is to win. Today,
I'm with you.
They're not trying to win. That I don't see it on TV. Nobody's trying to win
the matchup. They're trying to win the moment. But and then they're hoping that all the moments add up to a win on paper or on the field. But that's not always how it works. Yeah,
it never works that way, right? That, going back to forever with kids, best team on paper, they didn't win the championship.
Yeah, I know it.
You know.
All right, a couple more questions for you. You pitched on a lot of mounds here in Japan. Which one was your favorite?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know.
Which one was your least favorite?
You know what? I mean, Tokyo, you know, it's weird because I liked pitching at the Seibu Dome. You know what I mean? Even though it wasn't the best of mounds, it was a little soft. But for some reason, I liked that atmosphere. Tokyo, I liked the mound in Tokyo, but it was hard pitching at the Tokyo Dome because you give up a pop-up and it was small. Down the lines, you give up a home run. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so, I know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just feel like the Seibu mound seemed to be the most comfortable, you know?
Okay.
For some reason.
And then last question for you. There was no interleague play when you were here, except for maybe that 2005 season when it started. Mm-hmm. But how much different would that have been for you to have interleague?
Oh, my God. During I was the so entire excited. Time? I got hurt early that year in 2005. But, oh, my God, I was so excited. I ordered my baseball bats. I was so ready. I was taking batter practice in the Sapporo Dome. I was like, dude, because, you know, like all the parks back then were small. I don't know. I know some of them adjusted, you know, like the Yokohamas redid their stuff. But I was like, dude, I can hit by accident, hit a home run in those ballparks. So I remember when we got to spring training and, you know, we were talking about the pitchers hitting and stuff. And I just remember a conversation one time, just it wasn't like a serious, like, you know, just, you know, Trey was talking pitchers about bunting. And I was like, bunting? I was like, I'm swinging away. What are you kidding me? I was like, you know, I'm strong. I'm big. I used to hit back in high school. You know what I mean? I was like, I could accidentally hit a home run in you know, the Bay Stars or the Swallows field. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm not just bunting. I was like, I'm swinging away. So they're cracking up. But I was like, dude, I'm serious. So, I mean, I remember getting to the Sapporo Dome, you know, before the season started. And I was swinging and I was like, man, I'm ready. I was just swinging for fences. I was like, hit it hard, it'll go somewhere. You know, I was like, pop-ups would be at home runs, especially at the Bay Stars and the Swallows.
Yeah.
Or at least then.
Yeah.
At least back then. Well,
Jingu is the same stadium as it was before.
Oh, so is it? Oh, my God.
Although there was a 1-0 game last night between the Dragons and Swallows. But, hey, listen, we really, really thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Well, let's have you on again sometime in the future.
Oh, no, absolutely. Anytime. Let me know.
All right. Thanks a lot for the chat.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. So disdain for analytic-only approaches aside.
Cut him off at the pass.
I can tell you this. Never has that anti-analytic approach been articulated so well by a former player on JBW. But what would you like to direct your comments toward in this particular instance?
I would say, if so, it wasn't for your lack of trying.
My lack of trying? I know
you didn't try this time, but no, I love Carlos. Carlos,
I didn't try in the past.
Yeah.
I didn't try. It just happened naturally.
Yeah. Yeah, but what do you think about these damned analytics?
That is not the way I pose questions.
No. Anyway, no, Carlos and I, we go way back to the fighters' days at Tokyo Dome.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even worked for the Daily Yomiuri.
Oh.
And we were marginally acquainted there with the team. Because I had that was the team where I had the best connections before I got a full-time gig as a sports writer.
Okay.
And so, you know, we go back and he's just a very, very warm human being. And it really comes out, I think, in everything he talks about. He's got so much energy, so much love for the people in and around the game that it's contagious. Is the word I'm looking for. And you know, I think it was interesting, his take on the Japanese way of playing is, I think, interesting. And I don't think he's wrong. I think the bunting is such a hot button issue.
Well, he didn't say bunting only. He included that.
No, but he did. But that's sort of where it starts, because that's sort of the flagship tactic of Japanese professional baseball.
Sure. I think it stands out a lot more because it's easier to see. But I think there's actually a lot of hit and runs that go on, and there's a lot of running hits that go on.
There are.
A lot of times the guys foul the ball off, so they have to go back to the base, and then this is true.
That
particular tactic has changed because the count is not in their favor. So it's easy to count the bunt.
It is indeed. And one of the things that I do, I think my part of that discussion would be absolutely. And you know, when he said, you know, Hank Aaron wasn't just a home run hitter, he was a hitter.
Mm.
And I like that. But actually, the word I was expecting to hear was he wasn't just a home run hitter, he was a ball player.
You know,
because he, and what I mean by that is you do what's best in this situation. And I mean, you have to choose what's best, and the defense is trying to choose what's best, and you're always trying to do something that will increase your chances, not only in this one outcome, but for the next outcome and for further outcomes down the road. As you often say, you know, there are reasons, there are synergies to be had in doing things that on the surface don't look very productive.
Right.
You know, there's a good story, a short story. Steve Garvey would not in the least my favorite player, but he had a very smart approach to hitting, which was about once a week or a couple of times a month, he would try to bunt for a base hit. And the purpose of that is to keep the infielders honest, to keep them from playing too far back on him.
Mm-hmm.
And cutting off his holes into the outfield for hits. So there was an advantage, also get an easy hit on a bunt, because he was a good bunter. So that's what I talk about in synergies. And the idea is to get synergies on your side. And so I think that whole thing about the shift is, and I don't want to have the argument about analytics either, because my only argument is with people who say analytics is ruining the game, because analytics don't do nothing. They're not the ones swinging. Analytics isn't the thing swinging the bat.
Right.
You know, it's not them. It's not, you know, that's like saying the airplane crashed us, not the pilot who was flying it.
Right. If we open this can of worms, we're going to
go.
I don't think they're actually talking about analytics. I think they're talking about the people who want to implement them into the game. That's code for analytics.
I haven't been asked
to go out there and do a certain thing because the numbers say I should do it. So I can't say that's what's happening, but that's what it sounds like to me.
No, I mean, I heard you. I mean, I heard the Derek Jeter bandwagon and, you know, rolling along. And I did hear a story recently. One of the reasons Derek Jeter got out of the Miami Marlins was that he wanted to run for political office as a Democrat. But somebody said that would be impossible because he proved as a professional player for so many years that he was unable to go to his left.
Hashtag. Oh,
you know, and that's analytics is basically just, I mean, the whole purpose is just a scientific understanding of objectively provable truth. And then how people use it is how people use it. So, and I think I will agree that it is frequently misused.
Okay.
So, and I will leave it at that. But I always enjoy listening to Carlos, and I was surprised he didn't talk about his role as a chief baseball coach for India.
Oh, yeah, he didn't, because I didn't, maybe because I didn't ask him about it.
Yeah, so he got this right at the start of the pandemic, and as far as I know, he hasn't been to India coaching yet, but he's been doing stuff online with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's involved with India's national baseball team.
Well, that's good. That's awesome. Hey, it was a fun interview for me. Like I said, I knew of him, but we never crossed paths while he was pitching in that last season in 2005. And like he said, he was injured, but it was all fun. I mean, when you hear a pitcher, obviously I enjoyed the talk too. I enjoyed his snarkasm, as I call it, about analytics. But I asked him a question. My question was really directed about the schedule at the end. He got into
about interleague. Yeah.
When I asked him about interleague, and he just took it to a different zip code in talking about, he was ready to get his bats and talked about Trey Hillman and asked me to bunt, and I'm not here to bunt. I'm here to swing for the fences. And so that's what you and I weren't able to get on the same track the last time we talked about the universal DH. And I was talking about when to take a pitcher out, and you were telling me about it doesn't matter because they're bunting all the time. And I'm saying, no, I'm not talking about the pitcher in the batter's box. I'm talking about when to remove him from the mound. And so we couldn't get on the same page. But when you hear a guy talk about how he wanted to hit and whether he could or not, you know, I hear a lot of this. I used to play, you know, shortstop and pitch in high school. And I was, you know, it happens in Japan a lot. I was a good hitter. And then, again, it's not that they were not able to hit. They were just so much better at pitching. And that old thinking that Shohei Ohtani is helping to change now, hopefully, that you have to concentrate on one, you can't be both, that person just got moved over to the pitching side because they were a little bit better, or a little bit maybe development-wise, they were ahead in that on that side. And so, obviously, I don't want to diminish his hitting skills. I don't know. I never saw. But I'm just assuming that probably he was ahead pitching-wise, and so they pushed him over to that side, so he didn't get a chance to hit. So to hear how excited he was to play and to be able to hit and to think about playing in those dinky central league, well, he didn't call them dinky, but
he didn't
use that phrase, but I mean, they still are. I mean, you know, the pop fly home runs that we see in Tokyo Dome, the pop fly home runs that sometimes happen at Jingu, those still occur.
And well, then we had Yokohama we helped. Had yeah. Well, we had Hiroshima too. Then,
Citizen Stadium in Hiroshima. So yeah, so the pure joy and confidence of him getting ready to try to show off his skills as a two-way player and then not having it happen because he got injured was unfortunate.
I've learned so much about a lot of different things from Carlos talking to him over the years on a variety of topics. One of the things I learned that I never knew was a thing that perplexed me was that, you know, in Japan, if you're an import player and you've played 9 seasons in NPB, you're eligible to file for free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you also stop becoming registered. You become a domestically registered player.
Right. You don't count against the foreign.
Yeah, but it always seems silly because import players, typically, when they reach the end of the contract they signed when they came to Japan, they very often, especially if they played for the Swallows or the Carp, went to play for another team that was going to offer them more money.
Right.
So it seemed like, well, it's not really a rule. Okay, well, I learned because in his case, Carlos turned down an offer to pitch, and I'm going to say it was the Colorado Rockies offered him a contract.
Okay.
And he had to turn it down because the Fighters had his contract and they weren't going to release him. And I said, but you were an imported player. And the thing is, it's not imported players. It's that Japanese players, the big secret is Japanese players in Japan, it's not like MLB where the rules are the rules and nobody can break them and everybody knows your contract. In NPB, contracts are essentially secret between the team and the player.
Mm-hmm.
And those contracts, they can have riders, they can have supplemental contracts, which can say virtually anything. Hmm. If the Japanese kid who's likely be the hot pick in this year's draft, Kota Yazawa, says, you have to give me a chance to be a two-way player, and you have to post me by the time I'm 25 years old, he can tell teams that. And if they don't want to do it, they better not draft him.
Right.
Because he can stipulate that in a contract when he's signed, if he's got the stones.
Right.
It's not like in MLB where you have to do this and you have to do that and you have to jump through MLB's hoops. They have all the rules, but you can have a private contract that says virtually anything. And so the import players coming to Japan virtually all have contracts that say they're allowed to leave that team for another if they want at the end of the contract in Japan, or they're allowed to play overseas if they want to at the end of the contract. And that's the kind of deal I expect Roki Sasaki has with the Lotte Marines that require him to be posted.
Right. I did talk to somebody about that recently, and I said I wouldn't be surprised if there's something in there. But still, and we'll get to him a little bit later in the show. Sure. But I imagine.
But anyway, I learned that from Carlos because he was the exception. There have been other guys. Xu Min-che was one of the guys. The Lions, a Taiwan pitcher, he was. He signed as a free agent with the Oryx Buffaloes. So Oryx Blue Wave, I think they were at the time. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for that nugget. And again, Carlos, really enjoyed talking to you and hope we can do it again.
Yeah.
And
thank Always you so a much. Pleasure, Carlos. Stay well.
And good luck with the book.
Good luck with the book and other things.
All right. So making a four-seam transition, we had another no-hitter. This was the no-no hammer throwing down in Fukuoka. This was Nao Higashihama. On Wednesday at Fukuoka PayPay Dome, he shut down the hot-hitting Seibu Lions. And boy, you want to talk about a no-hitter out of nowhere. The final score was 2-0, and he faced the minimum because the two batters he walked were part of double plays, and then he fanned only 6, had only 1 ball hit to the outfield. That was the fewest of any no-hitter in NPB. And 3 pop-ups and a lined out, and the rest were ground balls. So he had the defense pretty busy behind him. What was your impression of this? I just thought this was incredible for 2 reasons. 1, because he shut down NPB's hottest home run hitter in Hotaka Yamakawa. Mm-hmm. That was number one. And then Cebu just really had come in hitting fairly well. They're not hitting really high in as team batting average, but they were hitting well going into that series. And he just kind of slammed the door that night. It was just an amazing feat by a guy I would not expect to throw a no-hitter.
No. You know, I think he's in that group of he's kind of in the B group.
I didn't even have him in the B group, to be honest. He was, because he had really one great season, I guess, early on. But since then, he's just been middle of the pack to me.
Yeah, I'll say that.
Him in the B group. I would put him in the C
plus. But I would, because he's one of those guys who has more than one plus pitch. But the problem is the lack of, the thing with most of the guys in that, the ace guys who've got three to four plus pitches. Mm-hmm. And plus command, mm-hmm. is that his comes and goes so often. I mean, he's not like, Shuta Ishikawa is a guy who's got, plus, but his teammate, but he's got, his command is terrible. I mean, the day when he can throw strikes, he's a candidate to throw a no-hitter. And Higashihama is your typical second-tier Japanese starter who has... he has stuff that comes and goes. There are days when his stuff is really good, and there are days when his command is really good, but they're rarely the same day. But my observation from watching lots of games is that when you have a guy who's pitching at this level, who knows what he's doing, and his stuff is really working, and he's throwing the pitches where he wants, they are really, really good. And this was his day, and his command. Now, one thing I looked at was the counts he pitched. He had 16 0-1 counts in this game.
And that's a lot. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. So he threw and three of the first pitches he threw were hit. So they were strikes. So he threw 19 first pitch strikes out of 27 batters. And eight of those guys got ball one. The other 19 three were out, and the 16 were behind in the count. He had 7-0-2 counts. I mean, he was just a strike-throwing machine. And with good stuff, just watch out. And Yamakawa said, just give me a break. We just couldn't touch him.
And,
although Yamakawa was one of the guys who walked, he and Takiya Nakamura. But, yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I only put him in the C-plus category because he just, he has been injured. He's been plagued with injuries, right? He comes in, he factors in for a little while, and then he has some issue that he has to deal with, and he disappears. When he's out there, he's usually effective, but I don't want to go by wins and losses all the time. But he has only had one season in which he has had more than double digits in wins. That was 2017. He went 16-5. I believe he was the wins leader with 16. And the ERA is really good. Career ERA 3.16. But this was only his sixth complete game. So it's not like he goes out there and at least every year. He's a 10-year pro. It's not like he goes out there every year and throws a complete game or two and has a shutout and has been dominant. And, he just hasn't been that guy. So I just thought it was an unlikely no-hitter.
Oh, yeah, I agree too, because the consistency has been very poor.
Right, but he certainly has been one of the better pitchers. And, he had, I guess it was the sinker that in particular that day and then the fastball, and then he just set everything else up with that. But, he did control the strike zone, and he located, I think, as you were talking about as perfectly as he can. He was the 84th pitcher to throw a no-hitter. That was the 95th no-hitter in MPB. And, we talked about it last week, and I asked you, and I said, is there something we should look out for? And you said, well, as long as Noki Sasaki is out there throwing each week, we gotta watch out for no-hitters. But we had Yuichiro Okano, who was perfect through five at Jingu, and we've had Sasaki with his effort. We had the perfect 9.2 innings from Yudai Ono. Anything out there we should be looking at, Jim?
Well, what I noticed the day after that, because my colleague says, who's a former soccer writer said, "What's up with the no hitters? Is something going on?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And so I looked, and what I noticed was the batting averages in NPB have plummeted in March and April the last 3 years. The last 4 years, I can't, because 2020 there was no March and April baseball.
Correct. Yeah. Late start because of COVID,
and that makes a huge difference. The fact that the batting averages are low, and when you know, let's say if you have a no hitter, then it doesn't really matter how many batters you're walking. But if you take a team like Oryx on the road, and they have a 190, they were about a 190 average when they weren't striking out, when they're putting the ball in play.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Roki Sasaki striking out 19 guys, the chances of them of no hitting Oryx on the road with 19 strikeouts. Well, of course, 19 strikeouts is not a 1 in 5 occurrence, but if you were to strike out 15, your chances of no hitting Oryx are probably about 1 in 10.
Which is pretty high.
Yeah. Which is extremely high. The chances of throwing a no-hitter, actually, I roughly calculate them as they're about 1 in 1,000. But this year, they're about 50% more likely than they were last year. And last year, they were about 50% more likely than 2 years before that, at least in April and May, when batting averages tend to be low.
So, yeah, that makes sense. You know,
the batting averages are low, hitters. I have no clue.
Yeah, I would like to talk to some hitting coaches. You know, like in the old days, we could go out and we'd say, okay, we've got this idea, we've got this notion, let's work on a story, let's interview some players, let's talk to some coaches.
I remember those days.
Yeah, can't do that now. And especially with even if we get the okay for the interview with the PR people listening in to every word, it's going to be hard for them to speak freely anyway. So I don't know. I would just say, let's keep a closer eye, because I mean, I could easily see Kodai Senga, the ace of the Hawks, doing something like that. I could see Masahiro Tanaka, if he gets through a few more starts and he really settles in and he gets the right conditions and he's at home in Sendai, against a team that's not hitting very well at the time. And yeah, I could certainly see him doing something like that.
Yeah, we might see one in Interleague, you know, somebody comes to one of these parks and it's, you know, it's Roki Sasaki or it's, I mean, the Pacific League, Central League team that's never seen him play.
Or the Dragons, just, you know, who can't get out of their own way most of the time.
The Bay Stars can hit a little bit, but the Dragons or the Bay Stars go in there, and he could pretty much chew them up and spit them out.
Yeah, but in the Central League, Osada, I was thinking about him coming close, Daichi Osada of the Carp coming close, and maybe Koyo Aoyagi of the Tigers, someone like that.
Sure. Yeah. If the fighters and the Marines play at Koshien this year, they're candidates.
But the thing is when a guy like Higashihama throws, I mean, he was completely off my radar. He throws a no-hitter. Now that kind of opens the door for some of these B starters.
Well, Yasuhiro Ogawa threw a no-hitter in the first and probably his only career game in which he struck out 10 batters.
Right.
I mean, what's next? Masanori Ishikawa?
Hashtag high
heat. Whom you complimented today on Twitter.
And I thought, it was delightful.
You made me flip that game on because it was on.
It was fun. It was fun.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's keep watching, everybody. And that's why, you know, we always hear Tim Kurkjian on ESPN saying, you know, you watch baseball, you could see something you've never seen on any given day. So I think we're going to see another one. I'm not betting that we will, but I think we certainly have a lot of time. And like you said, Interleague is a perfect time to create the perfect circumstances for another no-hitter. So let's keep an eye on that. Let's move along, make a two-seam transition. And yes, I decided to take a peek at the standings this week because this is the time of year when our buddy, our good friend, Claudio Rodriguez in Toronto, who was on the prediction special with us one of them this year. And he loves to point out that the teams that he picked are in the exact order or close to it. And I always scream back on Twitter, dude, it's May, you know, settle, pike down, pike down. It's May, you know, but I just remember how surprised I was when in the Central League prediction special, you picked the Carp finishing in the playoffs and I didn't believe it. And it wasn't because Seiya Suzuki is gone to the States. I don't fixate too much on one player. And I know that he got pitched. I always hear these guys in the States talking about, oh, he walks more than he struck out. I said, that's because they didn't pitch to him. It's not because he knows where the strike zone is per se. I mean, a lot of times they just didn't want to face him and there was nobody hitting behind him. But that aside, I was kind of surprised. But to look up and see that they're battling for first place or had a hold on first place, you know, it just speaks a lot about the foreign guys they brought in, the guys who have taken over leadership on the team since Suzuki is gone. And I want to credit the pitchers a lot, especially the rotation. So they're doing a good job. And it's nice to see because a lot of times, and especially in recent years, since they went to that Japan series, and I thought they should have won it, but they couldn't beat the Fighters, they have struggled. It just seems like getting through seasons, getting through the playoffs, they haven't done well in the playoffs, obviously. So it's nice to see them do well. And I think it invigorates the rest of that area down there, because when that team is strong, people care a lot about baseball and they certainly care about the rivalry between the Carp and the Tigers. So it's fun to watch.
Oh, I thought you meant that they should have beat the Hawks in 2018, but you weren't going that far.
No.
Okay.
The Fighters.
Okay. Let's stick with the Fighters. Yeah, that would have been a good Game 7 with Shohei Ohtani not able to pitch because he rolled his ankle. Yeah, that would have been good. I think your comment about the imports is absolutely spot on. The guys they got, especially Ryan McBroom.
Yeah.
Bingo. What a player. Drew Anderson. Today was his second start. He absolutely ripped the Yomiuri Giants a new uniform buttonhole or something.
You know what? I don't remember who Chris Johnson faced in his debut when he threw for the Carp in his first game, but I think it was the Giants. Mm-hmm. And I think he had him no hit for a little while and ended up giving up a hit, but did really, really well in that first game and was the hero and had his hero interview that day. And the same could be said for Drew Anderson. I think he gave up only one hit, and that came later in the game or around the middle part of the game. Yeah, yep. So it reminded me a lot of the Chris Johnson start. But of course, Chris was a left-hander. Drew is a right-hander, but really good start. So I'm glad
Drew is way too baby-faced to be in a comparison with Chris Johnson. Little 5 o'clock shadow there. So we've got those guys, and then we got Nick Turley, who pitched yesterday, and he got scorched by the. He pitched on Saturday, got scorched by the middle of the Swallows order, which is sort of like join the crowd.
Yeah, mainly Murakami. Yeah.
Yesterday was the solo home run to Tetsuya Yamada. And but today he shut him down. He gave up a single, but he only faced three batters. He looked really, really good, really confident. But the import thing is big. The other thing is the guys I already liked, like Shogo Sakakura. Another one is an MVP caliber season, MVP caliber start to the season from Ryoma Nishikawa.
Right, yes.
And the other one is this, the rookies, when I talked about, I pretty much drooled all over the podcast in the Central League prediction show. The rookies, the Carp have, the young guys, I'm absolutely infatuated now with in a baseball sense is Kento Nakamura, the right fielder. This guy is a ball player. He's got an arm. He can.
No. I'm not sold on the arm. I'm sorry.
Well,
I know he had a couple of assists in a game against the Giants, but they were from shallow right field, and he two bounced them. And the only thing that was good about them was that they were accurate. Online.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll buy that. I'll take that. I just remember the game. The game strikes me. I didn't see whether the Giants replaced their third base coach like the time they did after Kazuhiro Wada threw out two runners in one game.
I didn't notice either.
Yeah, it was like the first interleague game at this Giants Lions interleague game at Cebu Dome, and the next day there was a new third base coach out there. Yeah, it's like nobody told me you can throw. Okay, so but no, this guy's just a wonderful hitter, and this is the guy whose name I couldn't remember in the prediction show, who came from Toyota's corporate league team, where gotcha. They are the. And he was a teammate of Ryoji Kuribayashi at Toyota. Mm-hmm. And this is the place where they come to the CARP and they're going like, are you kidding me? This is your analytics? Like, you know, they probably have to wire home to Aichi Prefecture to get the data they need because the CARP ain't giving it to them. But these
Where's the Western Union office, please?
Yeah, Toyota's team is probably better than I would think it's probably better than most of the NPB minor league teams. And this guy can play. I mean, his response to slow throw. Maybe he hasn't been a pro long enough that he's not used to guys. He's not on the gas waiting for, you know, 90 mile an hour fastballs, and he was sitting on the 80 mile an hour fastball, and he hung two fat pitches in the middle of the zone, and he whacked him today. But he just looks like a really, really good hitter. And when the number seven,
I think a man up there is what you're doing.
The number seven hitter gets watched intentionally as a rookie, something's going on.
Yeah. Well, that's good. He is one of the guys I've seen. Chota Dobayashi has been doing well. Yep. I mean, at least he had a good start. And then Takashi Uemoto has been doing well. He stood out to me a little bit. So the CARP, I mean, they have it going, but I just think it's the rotation that's really good. You know, I was sitting around thinking about Alan Cudi the other day, and I thought, who does he remind me of in the U.S.? And there's a guy named Lance Lynn who's pitched for a few teams. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't do anything great. Lance Lynn gets strikeouts, but he just, you know, he's always going to deliver, it seems, a quality start for you. He's going to keep you in the game. And that's what Cudi reminded me of. You know, he doesn't throw particularly hard, doesn't throw great all the time, but he hits some spots. He's a thinking man out there on the mound, and he can execute some pitches and some situations, and he's good. You know, he's consistently good. So I really like what he's doing, even though the rotation, you know, that was my biggest question. I'm like, well, who's going to be throwing for these guys? I think we know a couple of the pitchers, but I can't see it. So, but I want to see if they can hold up for, you know, through the hot months and then heading into the second half, the last half of the season or the lighter stages of the season, they can hold up. I'm not convinced, but if they're going to hit really well and play the defense, of course, they've got great defense up the middle and on the infield with Ryosuke Kikuchi and Kaito Kozono. So I think if they play that kind of defense and they're going to hit, they're going to be in the running. And again, it's going to be close. I mean, look, the Dragons are still there. And I did notice something about the standings. If you look at the top four teams in the Central League, the top four have at least 20 wins. And the Giants have 24. So there's not a lot of separation going on out there. There's a lot of tight games, a lot of tightness in the standings. And I just, even the Tigers, who had this terrible, terrible start, they won today. And they're, again, it sounds like a lot, but to be 12 games under 500, only 12 games under 500, considering how they seemingly lost every day for the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, if you had Central League power rankings right now, there'd be like five teams somewhere towards. I mean, okay, yeah. maybe the Swallows would be number one, but you'd have four teams kind of bunched up right after them, and then you'd have the DNA Bay Stars.
Right. And so you got four teams over 500 and not, I mean, over 500. So it's pretty interesting to look at the standings, but I'm still not, like I said, not a lot of separation out there. So there's not reason to think, oh, this team's in last place. This team's in first place. It's over. But because last year, like I said before, this kind of got away from me last year before I could really take a look at the standings. It was pretty much, I guess Oryx kind of got out there and took control early, and the other, there was some separation between the top teams and the bottom teams by the All-Star break that really didn't change all that much. What about the Pacific League? Now I'm looking at the Eagles up at the top and just thinking, yeah, these guys forgot what losing is like. They remembered this weekend to move into double digits in losses, but 14 games over 500. Or is this old? Well,
they went till May 8th before they lost two games in a row.
Yeah, 15 games over 500. Yeah, they hadn't lost consecutive games.
They didn't have a losing streak, I think, until Thursday. Right. They lost Wednesday and Thursday to the Marines, and then they lost Friday and Saturday to the Lions. So, but the Eagles, and I know one of my Twitter followers were saying, "I'm not sold on the Eagles. I'm not sold. I hear you say you don't disrespect Kazuhisa Ishii, but you can't respect him either." And I'm going, "Come on, just give me a break." You know, I don't think any of that stuff, but I watch him. The only disappointing thing I've seen with the Eagles is this fascination with one-run tactics in sort of inopportune times. It's almost like, well, if I sacrifice now, it'll pay dividends because what? I don't know, because we're losing by three runs and I'm sacrificing. So there's some weird stuff going. I mean, there's some occasional weird things happening that, I mean, Japanese players aren't going to rebel, but players aren't they're not stupid either. And if they see like a manager seems a little out of his depth, they can kind of lose confidence a little bit. So I think that's the only concern. I don't think he's a bad manager, but I think he tends to rely on the book too much when for lack of a better reason. But I do like the Eagles pitching. Their offense, of course. I mentioned his name twin, Ryoma Nishikawa. Damn, what about Haruki Nishikawa?
Yeah.
Haruki Nishikawa, I mean, this is the leadoff man the Fighters missed for the first 6 weeks of the season. Nishikawa, not only is he just eating up bases and hitting line drives and extra bases and stealing bases, all those things he did with the Fighters. And the walks, always he did with the walks, even if he can't tell you how he walks, he does. it's just who he is. But I was curious. I was doing a little thing about the Fighters. I've been sort of asking myself, are the Fighters playing like their manager? Well, if they did, they'd have a lot of outfield assists. So I looked at the outfield assists for all the NPB teams through Saturday. Uh-huh. And the Carp are the leaders with 13.
And you're probably because Nakamura, people don't know if they can throw or not, so they got to test them out.
Well, they got 14 a lot of new today, faces so there. They're, I know they got at least one more today. And the Fighters are second, so that's profiles. The Eagles are second, and Nishikawa has more assists than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 NPB teams.
Wow.
He's got 7. He leads NPB with 7 assists.
Yeah, and they should know not to, you know, when to run on him. I shouldn't say not to run on him, but when to run on him. So
sure. Yeah, like when he's running towards the outfield wall. Okay, now's our chance. He's not looking.
He's not looking. His back's turned.
That's right. Throw him out of the game.
But it's not just him. And that was one of the things that I was concerned about was the offense, because we saw the offense struggle last season. So,
sure.
And again, Hiroaki Shimauchi, I love his swing. I've been talking about it for years on this show. He's an adequate guy in the cleanup spot. He's going to give you a good AB all the time. He's going to drive in some runs.
He's a grinder.
But he's not a power hitter. So
sure.
We were concerned about where the power was going to come from. I think it's still a concern. They're hitting some home runs. Nishikawa obviously has contributed to that. Jose, and I'm going to blow his name every time I try to say it. It's too long. But Jose Marmolejos. Hmm. Yes, got it. He's been productive. He doesn't have great numbers, but he has been productive.
Yes.
And then guys, they just keep running guys in and out of the lineup and matching up. I don't think we're going to see MVP type Hideto Asamura, but once in a while he'll get hot. Might get hot for a week. Might get hot for a day. But he needs to rest. He's not that young. So they bring in some guys. They bring in some speed. So they've got different ways to attack. And I think, I don't know if it's Kazuhisa Ishii or not, but I think they're doing a really good job. And based on the record, you could say the best job, but I'm not going to say that, of just mixing and matching and figuring out what the best plan for each day is to attack the opponents. And they're coming up with a lot of wins. And of course, we look at the pitching, and of course, you can say that. And I think it's true, but they're also playing really good defense behind those guys, and that's making a difference as well.
Yeah, I think the middle infield has been really good, and Asamura has become a pretty decent second baseman. He wasn't always,
mm-hmm.
but he has become. And I think Marmolejos is less about the fact that he's not, okay, he hasn't been Ryan McBroom yet. He hasn't been, you know, Il Coffey. I know Gregory Polanco yet. He hasn't been Adam Walker yet. But what he has been is a vast improvement over what the Eagles have had in the last couple of years. That's Agreed. The thing. I mean, that's where the Carp are. I mean, the Carp got the boost because they had zeros there. And he's been good. And, you know, Sung Chihao has been good in the bullpen now that he's back. Yuki Matsui is tremendous. They have a bunch of these guys who look like a lot of pitchers who look like they belong with the Oryx Buffaloes, and that they have really good stuff. And every third, second or third start, they'll remind you that they could really be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those guys, they always end up getting traded to the Chinichi Dragons at some point in their career. These are guys that are great as the second, third, fourth guy, fifth guy in your rotation. I mean, Masahiro Tanaka is easily their best this year, and he's looking really good.
Really good, And having much better luck with the runs being scored behind him.
Well, yes and no. He's had two games where they actually scored runs behind him this year. But,
oh, you mean while he was still pitching? But yeah, but I mean, last year it just seemed like they didn't score at all, even when he left the mound, and he took a bunch of L's. And this year they're at least scoring to get him off the hook, or he's keeping the game close.
He hasn't needed much to be off the hook for. He's been pretty good, and he's getting better too. He just looks much more comfortable. I think his fastball is definitely better than last year. And then when the fastball works, the slider is he just tears people up with the slider, so that works. And then of course they lost Takeru Norimoto to COVID. And geez, let's just bring up what's that Wakui guy doing on the farm team? Can we trust him? And he goes up and he throws his, you know, gets his 150th was it his 150th win as a starting pitcher? Holy smokes!
Yeah, and he threw a complete game. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, lots of, you know, there is talent there. We thought there was talent, starting pitching talent last year. It didn't really pan out, but Norimoto he's a good pitcher, and Takayuki Kishi's a good pitcher, and you put those guys behind Masahiro Tanaka, and good things can happen.
Yeah, they've got a good staff. On the other hand, you've got, but you've got the Marines who just can't seem to get that engine started. And they're scuffling and struggling. And it looks bad when you lose. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a good team. Whenever you lose games and consistently lose games, you look bad. And they just haven't been able to find it. So I hope they can get it together. I do think Tadahito Iguchi, the manager, is using whatever players he can. He's bringing up young guys. He's mixing and matching. He's trying. He's not just running the same guys out there who are not producing. So they're making that effort on that side, but things are not changing in the standings for them. So I love, hope that can change.
A guy who I loved for his numbers in the minors is Akito Takabe. And I just love watching this guy play. And the fact that he's, when I first saw him hit, I thought, wow, you know who he looks like when he's hitting? He's got the same batting stance as a Katsuya Kakanaka.
Oh.
Is that his name?
I haven't noticed. I'll look out for that next time.
Yeah, he's got that really severe crouch. He's smaller, though. You know, you wouldn't confuse the two because one's kind of athletic and fast, and the other one's was.
Hashtag high.
The other one isn't, yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then bringing up the rear is the Nippon Ham Fighters and Tsuyoshi Shinjo, Big Boss, and it's no surprise, but they have been playing better. They did sweep the Hawks this weekend in a series in which they had two shutouts. The one probably less predictable with Hiromi Ito throwing the shutout on Friday. And then they came back with Naoyuki Uwasawa on Saturday.
Yeah, he's pitched well. And I think he was the guy Tsuyoshi Shinjo was talking about when he says, I've got pitchers who pitch really well but never win just because of bad luck. And he was 0-4. And he's easily the fighter's best pitcher. And he pitched just some really good games and then watched the fighters struggle on offense. So,
yeah.
Good to see that.
And they didn't struggle on offense today. And this kid, I'm telling you, Chusei Manami, he's so fun to watch. He's got such a great personality. And today he had the game to go with it because he had an infield single, then a triple, then a home run that was just a no-doubter. And like I said, I said it in the prediction special, he oozes athleticism. It's like a mixture of Michael Jordan and the baseball Michael Jordan and his manager, Shinjo. It looks like if those two got somehow had their clones merged together somehow.
Okay.
Thank you. That's what they would come up with, a kid who looked like Chusei Manami, and I hope he gets more opportunities. And like we talked about earlier, Big Boss wanted, I guess he made some statement this past week. I want players to play like they want to stay on the first team. And
Shinjo's had three times when the fighters, I think, lost their first seven or eight games. He got kind of fed up and he refused to meet the press afterwards.
Yeah. Even when they won some games, he wouldn't talk to the press.
He had three. And this was the third time that I know that he had left a comment after a loss. First one was tomorrow. And then the next day they won their first game. And then he made another equally
cryptic,
incoherent comment and they won the next game. And then, you know, but it was actually a very clever comment in which it was about he got poetic and he said something about you don't expect flowers to bloom just by watering them a lot in one day.
This is
going to take time. And the next day they looked good. And this week, after a kind of an ugly 4-2 loss to the Oryx Buffaloes, he said, I see guys who don't look like they want to be on the first team, and you got to get the bat off your shoulder because you can't make anything happen if you don't swing the bat. But of course, we're talking about a manager who didn't really understand the concept of the strike zone or walk, so I'm not quite certain what that meant. But
it means that he has a different view from the dugout now as a manager, is what it means.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'd swing at that.
That ball was coming at him really fast, man. He couldn't see where it was going when he was a player, but
he looked a lot fatter from the dugout, I suppose. But anyway, he made that comment on Tuesday, and the following day, Wednesday, they won, and they haven't stopped winning. So we've got a team managed by Tsuyoshi Shinjo that hasn't stopped winning. And I four I games. I almost never expected to say that sentence.
Yeah, four games. I'll say what I said earlier. Pike down. The Dragons won four games in a row this season, and come on now. So have the Tigers, I believe now. So
The Eagles, of course. The Eagles, of course. You know, while they did lose four games straight, they also won 11 straight decisions, which is past the benchmark for the time when you should say, this really probably means something. When you win 10, well, it wasn't 10 straight games, so there's a little difference, and they did win 11 straight decisions on Tuesday. So bingo. The Eagles are, to some degree, for real.
All right, to some degree. Yes.
I'd put money on them doing reasonably well the rest of the way.
Okay, so would I. Making a one-seam transition, we'll end by doing the Rockin' with Roki segment and the Ray Raw rock star on Friday. He improved to 4-0 with a strong seven-inning start against the Orix Buffaloes. 4-1 victory at Kyocera Dome, Osaka. Now, two things I want to hit on regarding this before we get out of here. One is, I think he has had seven starts this season, and three of them have been against Oryx. And that's what I was asking Carlos Mirabal about before he ran away with the bats comment or the batting comment. And that was I love the interleague because it gives us a break from this monotony of having the same matchups almost and teams playing each other so much. And this is kind of ridiculous that Sasaki has had to pitch against the Buffaloes so many times already earlier this early in the season. It makes me, I'm upset about it. Okay, let's put it that way.
Well, partly explains why batters are hitting like 170 against him.
Well, they shouldn't be hitting that high because they shouldn't be seeing him that often. Of course, like I said, if you beat people's heads in, they're going to come back and at least try to make a better showing. And they really have gotten better incrementally. Each time they've faced him now. So they haven't beaten him, but they beat him up a little bit.
Well, I think what I saw on Friday was each batter basically went up looking either I'm going to wait for the splitter or I'm going to wait for the fastball.
Fastball, yeah.
And wait for one of him to miss with the pitch that they were looking for. And he said before he's not a fan of the Osaka Mound. The Osaka Dome Mound is a little steeper than the one in Chiba, and he doesn't he's not a fan, and I think that affects him a little bit. I think it hurts his velocity a little bit, and his command isn't as good. His pitches are a little flatter there, so the fastball flattened out. He misses with the splitter a lot. In fact, he didn't quite ditch the splitter, but it hasn't been good for him there. He went to the slider a lot more. He had a lot more success with the slider on Friday. The fastball is still good, but it's only fast, and it's not as fast as normal. So they were the guys who were looking for it when he missed it in the heart of the zone. They were putting the barrel on it. So they weren't able to hit him frequently, but they were able to hit him.
Right. So, one thing to look out for. And then secondly, we had a story run in our paper. I believe it came out online on Friday night, maybe Saturday, and I forgot to immediately tweet it, so I've lost it. But I'll try to get it and find it tomorrow when we post the show, and I'll try to tweet that out. But anyway, the story talked about the fact that the Marines have really had a strict plan in place for Sasaki and how they're really putting his future ahead of immediate gains, whatever those gains might be perceived to be, whether it's getting stats, whether it's getting a win here early in the season. And so, although I kept screaming on the show last year that I wanted him to be unleashed and, you know, we need to peel off these kid gloves and let him go, I really understood after reading this story why the team is limiting him. And again, he's a baby. He's still 20. And we should all understand that as well. This is definitely a child in the developmental stages of life, of his pitching career. So we got to keep that in mind, too. So as much as we want to see these records, I believe he will be back at some point, especially because with more experience, he will become a better pitcher and less of a thrower. So we're going to see. I think the best is yet to come, actually.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have only seen more and better from him, and I think, you know, it's a good lesson when he sees, you know, he'll learn. I think my comment when I was asked to do a story for Slugger magazine about Japanese pitchers, and I had to ask MLB scouts, you know, what do you think of these guys? And essentially the scouts are split about Roki Sasaki. Either he's the greatest thing since, you know, Nolan Ryan, or I can't tell you because he hasn't been through the ringer enough. And I think both things are true.
Yeah, I would say that.
And and I think I had the same comment. I was just about a week before Tetsutoyo Yamada was hit in the back, and in his career took about a 1.5 year hit in 2016. I asked then Toronto Blue Jays scout about him. He said, he was all over the place. He said, I want him now. And Alex Ramirez, you know, who's one of these guys, sometimes you think, wow, he's still out in left field with the Giants a little bit, but sometimes he's so spot on that it's remarkable. He said, I want to see him go through, you know, a little bit more to understand. And you have to keep making adjustments. You have to make adjustments to things you've never seen before because your opponents are doing that. You know, they're always, as you say, it's always a battle of, you know, staying ahead of the opponents. And until you've been through the hard times, you don't know, and you don't really know that process. And right now, you know, when he gets, you know, he sees how easy it was, as easy as it was for Oryx to hit his fastball and his splitter, while his splitter was pretty much junk the other day, except when he got it towards the end of the game. But when he sees, you know, the worst hitting team in NPB, you know, barreling up his best pitches, you know, okay, I got things to work on. One thing he doesn't need to work on is his humility. When he said, it's really an honor to be able to beat Oryx's excellent lineup.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is just his sincere humility at facing professional hitters, not some kind of sarcastic
or the boilerplate kind of comment. Yeah.
I think he actually means that to be A, respectful, and B, knowledgeable that he doesn't know everything.
Right. Yeah, so he went 7 innings, gave up 6 hits, struck out 7, didn't walk anybody, gave up 1 run. And like I said, he's 4-0. We got to go. One note, Seibu slugger Takeya Okawari-kun Nakamura passed beloved Giants legend Shigeo Nagashima on Friday when he hit his 445th homer. So congratulations to him. He's now 14th all-time in home runs. And guy, I saw after my first couple years here at the paper and said, that guy's going to be the best cleanup hitter in Japan by next year. And by golly, he has become that more. So keep going. Keep swinging for the fences. All right.
446, because one more, dude.
What's that?
One more. 446. That's what I'm going for.
You?
No, him. I want him to hit 446 because that would be one more extra helping. Second serving.
Oh, I'm too sleepy. Sorry. Okay. All right,
that's the kindest thing you've said to me tonight. So, okay.
All right, so we do have a high heat question, but we'll save it for next week. We'll put that one on deck. Anyone who has a high heat question, please send it to us via Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a message, comment there. Look for us on Google Play and iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at J Ball Allen. and feel free to submit your questions via email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.